Today, will fears over the climate crisis finally kill plans for a third runway at Heathrow Airport? And why the race to get us better beds is leading to a recycling nightmare?
There's nothing more dramatic than a ruling being given in a courtroom, and the judges walked in, the three appeal court judges, they took their seats, everyone sat down in their places, and then Mr. Justice Lindblom begins his ruling. Now, it wasn't a very long ruling in terms of appeal court judgments, and he very simply said that the government's policy to expand Heathrow was illegal because it did not take into account the requirements to cut our carbon emissions in the Paris Agreement.
Sandra Leville is The Guardian's environment correspondent.
As a journalist, I actually didn't expect that to happen. I thought we would be back where we were when the High Court considered it. So it was. This is an amazing story. This is a groundbreaking legal judgment. That's what it felt like. Well, in the courtroom, there was excitement, shock, relief, I suppose it was. But obviously you can't jump around in the courtroom. So then there was the shuffling around as the appeal court judges went out. And then there was jubilation on the steps of the High Court.
These campaigners have been battling for decades against a third runway at Europe's busiest airport. When Heathrow began making the business case for expansion, environmental objections hardly cut through. But as the consequences of global heating have become increasingly tangible, the balance of this argument has started to shift. From The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in Focus, has the climate emergency finally killed Heathrow's third runway? How long have people been talking about expansion at Heathrow?
Well, way back in 1949, it was originally mooted. In fact, there's an old lady that lives in Harmondsworth, which is the village that's going to be devastated by any expansion, who can remember back in the 50s fighting the runway. And she's still living in the same house and preparing to fight this one, and has been fighting this one for the last 20 years. So it goes back a long time. But I think in recent history, it really was put back firmly on the table by the Labour government in 2001.
And so at that point, under Tony Blair, they were making essentially a business case for a new runway, a runway that would be more than 2 kilometres long and involve increasing from around 400,000 flights per year to over 700,000 flights. And it would mean knocking down one entire town. Were environmental arguments being made at the time?
Yeah, I think environmental arguments have always been made about aviation expansion by the sort of core of environmental activists and experts and scientists. But in terms of wider public concerns, it just wasn't there at the time. If you think back to what was happening in 2001, we had 9/11. This just wasn't on the radar.
8 years later, Gordon Brown was Prime Minister.
This week, we have demonstrated our determination not to shirk the long-term decisions on Heathrow, but to press ahead with a third runway at that airport.
I thought there was this really interesting cabinet meeting that took place, apparently the most angry that there was under his premiership, in which the business secretary, Peter Mandelson, and the transport secretary, Jeff Hoon, were pit against the climate change secretary, Ed Miliband, and the environment secretary, Hilary Benn. And the core of the argument was Heathrow. Hoon and Mandelson were hugely pro-expansion, and Ed Miliband was irritating them by trying to get environmental protections put in place. And during the meeting, Hilary Benn said, "We've got to think about what young people want, and young people are much less likely to support this." And if the story is true, Peter Mandelson literally banged his head on the table with, and I quote, an audible thump. I mean, do you think that that row underlined how things were changing at the time?
I think it's the beginnings of change. And I think, you know, the case for Heathrow was then, and actually still now from the supporters' side in business, it's a business case. It's that if you look at it in the most extreme, if this doesn't happen, the UK will collapse economically. Some people might interpret it as. But yeah, I mean, Nowadays, you might consider that Hilary Benn and Ed Miliband might have a bit more clout behind their arguments because I think the whole issue of climate change is so much more to the fore. But you can see how they didn't really have much of a strong voice at the time.
So while Labour's sort of tearing itself apart over Heathrow, in 2009, we're also approaching a general election, and David Cameron, then leader of the Conservative Party, sees it as an opportunity. I mean, an advisor at the time told me that those rows were one of the reasons that the Conservatives decided to oppose a third runway. Also, because Cameron had this mantra at the time,
vote blue, go green.
He was going to the Antarctic and riding huskies.
Concern for the environment reflected in this early visit to the Arctic, a trip that became known as Hug a Husky.
And, let's be honest, if I'm being cynical, there was a political reason too. Constituencies around Heathrow, those most affected by the changes, were target seats or seats that the Tories already held on to.
We have made the environment a priority, fighting for a climate change.
So they go into the election with a manifesto saying that they want to make Heathrow better, not bigger.
Opposing the third runway at Heathrow.
Do they stick to that in government?
No, they clearly don't stick to it in government. And I think that if you talk to the people who've been campaigning against Heathrow, this is one of the things that really sticks in their craw. They feel this is one of the greatest betrayals that the Conservative government inflicted upon them, because they believed Cameron's approach. And indeed, he went down to the areas round Heathrow and stood there saying, no ifs, no buts, no new runway. There was a period of intense lobbying on the Chancellor, George Osborne, who was always more inclined to be pro the airport expansion in terms of the impact on UK PLC. And it puts Cameron in a position where he can't be seen to be directly U-turning on what he said to the people, but by long-fingering it, if you like, and setting up a review led by the former director of the CBI, Howard Davis, he's pushing the issue away from his political decision, because the review looked at the airport capacity in the whole of the South East. And it wasn't directed to come up with Heathrow as an answer. It was directed to look at the whole issue independently.
It was quite a clever wheeze, really, for David Cameron, because, as you say, this wasn't easy for him. I mean, they actually had a Transport Secretary, Justine Greening, who represented Putney, under the flight path. They had to move her out of the way before they could even open the door to this. They also had Zach Goldsmith in Richmond, who was threatening a by-election.
Well, I made it very clear
if the third runway was something they went ahead with.
That if David Cameron's no ifs, no buts, there will be no third runway line was broken, that I would give people an opportunity to vote again.
So they handed it to Howard Davies, and he actually didn't report until after the next election. But in the meantime, he put down a series of options in an interim report. What were they?
So, yeah, he put down a series of options, which was looking at Heathrow.
So we've looked at two particular options there, a new northwestern runway.
An expansion of the second runway, expanding to a third runway, and then the expansion of Gatwick.
So Gatwick has come back into contention.
Those were the three options he put forward.
What were environmental groups saying at the time?
That there shouldn't be aviation expansion in the southeast. That, you know, in terms of climate change, the emissions from aviation expansion would be damaging to the climate, and there just shouldn't be any aviation expansion.
Are environmentalists relaxed about aviation expansion elsewhere in the country?
No, I think environmentalists don't believe that aviation should be increasing at this time, because at the moment, while you've got electric cars coming on stream, you do not have electric aeroplanes coming on stream, or even hydrogen-powered aeroplanes coming on stream. Heathrow is the biggest carbon emitter in Europe, and UK emissions from aviation are predicted to increase from 6% today to 25% by 2050. So you've got these highly carbon-intensive aeroplanes emitting greenhouse gases. And then wherever you have an airport, you have thousands and thousands of cars sucked into that airport to bring people in, all of which are petrol and diesel cars, creating air pollution and greenhouse gases. So they're just high-intensity emitters. And for environmentalists, you know, aviation expansion is a no-no.
But for all that, it almost felt at the time, and we're only talking around 5-6 years ago here, that the business case for aviation expansion was overwhelming. That for a lot of politicians, the question wasn't if we should expand, it was where we should expand. And the options he put on the table led to intense lobbying.
If we build at Gatwick, we create two world-class airports.
From Gatwick and Heathrow.
Heathrow is the UK's only hub airport. connecting all of the UK to global growth.
I mean, I remember it. I was writing about politics at the time. You'd go to party conferences and they'd have stands everywhere, posters everywhere. You'd see billboards, you'd write a story and their PR companies would be immediately onto you. I mean, do you think that they were so aggressive because public opinion hadn't shifted enough on the environment by that point?
No, I think they were so aggressive because they're very powerful companies with huge lobbying investment. The story of how Heathrow went from being not happening to being right back on the table is a story of intense lobbying and how the power of lobbyists get into the political system. There's quite a revolving door between senior Department of Transport people and Heathrow people. And, you know, it's quite an intensely interconnected world.
OK, so the Tories go into the 2015 election saying very little about Heathrow, basically waiting for the Davies Commission to report.
If we say anything now before studying the report, actually, you could endanger whatever decision is made.
It does. In July 2015, what does he say?
Well, he says,
after 2.5 years' work, we have concluded that the right answer is to build a third runway at Heathrow to the northwest.
And if you talk to people at Greenpeace, you know, they always imagined it was going to be Heathrow because of this intense lobbying.
Particularly important from an economic point of view.
He also said that Heathrow is a difficult place. He acknowledged that it's right on the edge of a city. It's an incredibly dense area. He suggested that there should be a package of environmental measures such as banning night flights, a noise levy to fund things like insulation in homes in the area. Did the environmental lobby think that those were serious steps?
No, and clearly from an environmental perspective, they're not serious steps. How does home insulation help reduce greenhouse gases which are burning up the atmosphere? I mean, it was a joke, really. It was a joke, but it was sort of dark sense of humour with it because it was like, oh, here we go again. Here we go again.
Here we go again. But were Greenpeace and other groups feeling quite pessimistic at the time?
I think that sort of local campaigners, having spoken to them at the time, you know, they were devastated, absolutely devastated. Because if you think how much energy and engagement it takes to create a local campaign about anything, and then you win, or you think you've won, and then the whole of the business world come back at you again, and it's very hard to start again. And at that time, it wasn't like today when we see people marching on the streets about climate change. It just wasn't that of a much of a mainstream issue still. So often they were seen as NIMBYs, which clearly I don't think they were NIMBYs. I think they were people who were going to be directly impacted by something which was impacting on a global scale. So, but yeah, I think they weren't supported and they weren't seen as a mainstream view.
That Airports Commission, published by Howard Davies in 2015, sets the direction of travel for the Tories from that point all the way up to a vote in favour of Runway 3 in Parliament in 2018.
The ayes to the right, 415. The noes to the left, 190.
But of course, since then, we've got a new Prime Minister. Thank you. And Boris Johnson has definitely had a bit of a starring role in the drama that is the story of Heathrow, right back from when he was London Mayor.
The government needs to stick to its promise of 2010, the manifesto on which I was elected in 2008 and 2012, and that's to rule out a third runway, not just for the next 2.5 years, but for forever.
What were his views?
Boris Johnson, when he was London Mayor, called Heathrow a 1960s planning error. And he's never really gone back on his opposition to Heathrow being expanded. And actually, he talks quite coherently about air pollution and noise pollution and how this just isn't the right place in the 21st century to put a new airport, effectively, another airport tacked onto the old airport. And in true Boris Johnson style, he came up with a rather dramatic option of having an airport built on the Thames estuary, which became nicknamed Boris Island. But actually, if you look at cities like Copenhagen, indeed, they did build their airport on an island just outside the city. So it wasn't as ludicrous as it seemed.
Someone I spoke to at the time said that while in theory, it's quite a good idea to have an airport further out east so that the planes come over the sea rather than over a major city, there were some specific big problems with his idea. First of all, SS Montgomery, an unexploded munitions ship, apparently right under the site, which, if it set off, could flood large parts of central London. A protected bird sanctuary that could be a bit of an issue for planes coming over. the need for a high-speed line through Tory parts of the home counties. And he argued that this was about the environment. Is a new airport better for the environment than expanding Heathrow?
If you're going to have airline expansion, you could argue that by putting it out on an island away from one of the most highly populated cities in Europe, it's a better alternative because you're not dragging all that pollution and that greenhouse gas emissions with traffic going through a major city. I mean, Boris Johnson's obviously not anti-airport expansion per se because he suggested Boris Island and is not a man who has sort of stood on the environmental front lines.
But he is someone who's been very passionate about Heathrow. I mean, he actually said he would lie down in front of the bulldozers if they ever tried to expand it when he became an MP in West London.
I will join you. I will lie down with you in front of those bulldozers and stop the building.
When Johnson becomes Prime Minister, all of this would suggest that he might pause the whole thing. Did he do that?
Well, no, he didn't do that. In a sense, why did he need to make a decision? Because actually there was a process ongoing at that time which had to run its course.
You say a process was underway. Tell us about that.
Well, once it became clear that the 2018 vote had taken place and that the airport expansion was, you know, government policy, there was a legal action mounted by several groups, and key were councils in West London, Hillingdon, Richmond, and other councils in Maidenhead, Theresa May's borough, and the Mayor of London, all united under one banner, which was all about air pollution and noise pollution and the intense disruption to a very busy city, to ordinary people. And then you had Plan B, which is a small NGO fighting against aviation expansion, who were the first ones to take the environmental case, the climate change case. They were then later joined by Friends of the Earth.
Today, Friends of the Earth are taking the government to court.
Who put their muscle, I suppose, behind that application, that challenge on climate change.
Stop Heathrow expansion. Because filling the skies with more and more planes isn't what fighting climate change looks like.
They raised the issue of the Paris Agreement, which is obviously this landmark agreement in 2015, a global agreement which took a long time to thrash out, in which countries have committed to attempt to keep global warming down to below 2 degrees, ideally to 1.5 degrees centigrade, and that each country set themselves carbon emissions reduction targets to do this.
Along the way, these environmental groups have been making these arguments, and it's often felt like a David versus Goliath contest. As Plan B and Friends of the Earth enter this particular part of this row, if you like, have they got the public much more on their side? Has the kind of total mood about climate changed?
Well, not only the total mood, but also the actual physical climate is tangibly changing.
The raging bushfires show no signs of slowing down.
Rivers across northern England burst their banks and chaos ensued.
As California suffers through an unprecedented drought that we've been covering over half the state, now facing the most severe conditions.
So you have that tangible sense of something's happening, and then you have huge and growing public pressure on politicians, which they can't escape at the moment. So the whole mood has shifted. And not only that, you have companies like BP, one of the biggest carbon emitters, announcing that they are going to reduce to net zero their emissions, not only from their own oil and gas, but from our use of their oil and gas, which is an extraordinarily radical statement for an oil and gas company to make.
And so last week, we get what many have called a groundbreaking ruling. What did it find?
Well, the appeal court judges found that when Chris Grayling, as Transport Secretary, drew up the Aviation National Policy Statement, which looked at aviation capacity in the southeast and the need for expansion, that whole document, he failed to take into account the Paris Agreement and our country's commitment to reduce our carbon emissions under that agreement. It isn't even mentioned in the Airline National Policy Statement. So the judges agreed with Friends of the Earth and Plan B that because British law says we are signed up to reduce our emissions, when you consider an infrastructure project, you have to consider that law. And in fact, in British terms, it's in our planning law. And because Grayling had not considered the impact of the Paris Agreement, his document was illegal.
And what does that mean? I mean, will the government appeal? Will Heathrow appeal?
So given the document is illegal, the approval of Heathrow expansion is illegal. Now, that's not to say, as the appeal court judges said, that's not to say that if they go back to that document and redraw it and consider the Paris Agreement, the government could certainly go back and try and make that compatible, or the government could scrap the whole airline national policy statement. At this stage, we don't know what the government's going to do, but we do know the government is not appealing the judgment.
We will ensure that we abide by the judgment and make sure that we take account of the Paris Convention.
Heathrow, as a secondary party to the case, has announced it will appeal the judgment, but I think it's quite significant that in the past, on major infrastructure projects, when there's a hurdle of a judicial review or a court action, the government comes back and they push the appeal process to the very limit in the Supreme Court, and they've chosen not to do that in this case.
What's Heathrow's argument?
Heathrow argue that the business case is overwhelming for the expansion of Heathrow. John Holland Kaye said only last week that Heathrow's expansion was vital to Britain's global ambitions post-Brexit, and that trade via Heathrow was going to be vital to our future outside the European Union.
And that is why I say no Heathrow expansion, no global Britain.
And what's very interesting is that actually the vast majority of flights to and from Heathrow are leisure flights, not trade flights.
So could Heathrow expansion be made compatible with our obligations under the Paris Agreement?
Well, I'm sure Heathrow will argue and has argued that yes, they could. Others would argue not. I mean, the Committee on Climate Change, which is the government's advisers on climate, has said that aviation emissions must remain at 2005 levels by 2050. And they have also said that Heathrow expansion requires other sectors to reduce their emissions by more than 80% and in some cases to net zero. So if you shut down everything else, if you took all the transport off the roads, et cetera, you might make Heathrow compatible with our requirements to cut emissions.
Seems quite landmark, the ruling. Landmark, not just for Heathrow and the government, but arguably landmark for how we consider the climate crisis in future. Do you think that it is?
It's the first time that the Paris Agreement has been used in a court to declare an infrastructure project illegal. But it won't be the last time, because there's probably lawyers lining up now to take cases against major road development schemes in this country and other development schemes. And it seems now that no longer will you be able to just put a business case for a development.
I suppose one of the questions I have then is, where do we go from here? Because we do know that the Prime Minister has been very vocally anti-Heathrow. All the Labour leadership candidates say that transformative environmental change will be at the heart of their leadership if they get into power. Does this mean that Heathrow expansion simply can't happen anytime soon? And if that's the case, do we then reach a place where the business case is easily going to be trumped by the environmental case?
We have to wait and see what they're going to do. I think the environment for Heathrow expansion is much, much more hostile from all political parties, from the general public. I think the environmental case is much stronger now than it was. And the business case is weakening in a sense, because if you look at, for example, Keir Starmer standing for Labour leadership, he says you can't have something anymore that's good for the economy and bad for the environment. It has to be good for the environment and good for the economy. And that going forward is the kind of prism through which politicians are beginning to look at major infrastructure projects. The world has changed and things are very different now. So is Heathrow expansion going to happen? Well, I wouldn't bet on it.
That was Sandra Laville, and this story is very much not over. Keep following it at theguardian.com. Coming up, the environmental impact of trying to get a better night's sleep. Now, recent years have seen a boom in what is being called the sleep economy. Everything from therapy sessions to natural supplements and sleep trackers have become a multi-billion dollar industry. But one of the biggest areas of growth has been in mattresses, with companies racing to sell them to us with appealing 100-day returns and people throwing them away at a faster rate than ever before. The Guardian's Shirin Kale argues that it's quickly adding up to an environmental disaster.
It's never been easier to buy a mattress online. Maybe you've bought one, tried it out, and then sent it back. But do you ever wonder where those mattresses end up? There are now over 175 different online companies that will ship mattresses to your front door in record time. Many of these mattress companies will even have 100-day comfort guarantees, meaning that you can try out the mattress and if you don't like it, you can just send it back for a full refund. So, what happens to all these mattresses? You might not want to hear it, but mostly they go straight to landfill. The UK sent 7 million mattresses to landfill in 2017. In Scotland alone, the amount of mattresses sent to landfill would stack 112 times higher than Ben Nevis, and that's just in 1 year. According to the National Bed Federation, only 19% of mattresses are currently recycled. The reason? It's the springs. They're a machine killer. Very few facilities currently exist in Britain to recycle mattresses. And this isn't just a British problem. Mattresses are a global environmental nightmare. One of the companies in the UK that is currently recycling mattresses is Circom in Coventry. Currently, only about 60% of the material in the mattresses they process are recycled. The rest is converted into fuel. The reason for this is the regulations around mattress recycling in the UK. It is really hard to find secondary markets for fibre and foam. I went on a tour of the Circom recycling facility. There's an enormous steel machine. It kind of looks like a blender for mattresses, and then they just feed the mattresses into it and they chomp it down and then spit out the metal, the fibre and the foam. Speaking with Mike Stolick and Richard Alsop of Circom, I learned that there is so much criminality in the mattress recycling business. One of the main scams involves people getting hold of second-hand, used mattresses, recovering them and then selling them to consumers as brand new mattresses. The consumers do not know that they're getting a disgusting, dirty old mattress. It's probably full of fleas. They think they're getting a brilliant deal. Another scam involves people pretending to be reputable mattress recyclers. Consumers will find them online, pay a fee, have their mattress collected, and they think that that mattress is going to be recycled responsibly. What actually happens? The scammers will often rent a shed, perhaps from an unsuspecting farmer, fill it to the brim with mattresses, and then scarper. But this particular mattress scam knows no borders. Perhaps you saw last July 100 containers of waste were found in a port in Sri Lanka. It had been illegally exported there. What was inside those containers?
Well, Sri Lanka Customs has opened 5 containers of the consignment, which allegedly carried waste materials in the guise of mattresses.
So, can anything be done? As with so many other things, don't buy a new mattress unless you actually need one. It would also be a major help if the government would loosen the regulations around secondary markets for fibre and foam. That would make it so much more easy for mattress recycling companies to be profitable because they'd be able to sell on the rest of the materials and the mattresses they process. And lastly, the mattress companies themselves. If you are sending these mattresses to landfill, is that okay? Could you be doing more? Could you be partnering with care homes or hospitals or hotels to ensure that those mattresses are being used again? Because if you don't, the global mattress mountain will outlive us all.
That was Shirin Kale. Read more from her on our website. That's it for today. My thanks to Sandra Laville and to Shirin Kale. This episode was produced by Rosie Gillett, Elizabeth Cassin and Courtney Youssef. Sound design was by Axel Cucutier. The executive producers are Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard. I hope you have a lovely weekend. We'll be back on Monday.